August 9, 2021. It's the Watch for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Happy Monday. Start off the show with Mr. PC, John Coltrane. And, yeah, that PC stands for Paul Chambers. He's a pretty incredible bass man. And if John Coltrane writes you a song, I would. Yeah, I know Miles Davis wrote a song called John McLaughlin, but I would. Still pretty happy. And then we had Travis Johns with Improvisation 073. And because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, I have with me, through the miracle of that kind of connect, Travis Johns. Welcome aboard, brother.
All right. Hey, Mike. Thank you for having me. And again, a shout out to the Brutal Sound Effects crew for putting in the connection. And as I was saying, long-time listener, first-time caller, and glad to actually be able to contribute.
Yeah. Brutal Sound Effects crew for another connect. And where are you talking to me from, Travis?
I'm coming to you loud and clear, hopefully, from the wonderful city of Ithaca, New York, which
Ithaca,
I believe they say
right.
Centrally isolated. We're like 5 hours from just about everywhere.
But also former home of Carl Sagan.
That's true. That's true. I believe his house is still owned by his widow. It's right by the Cornell campus, and there's also the Carl Sagan Center that's actually just right down the block from my office, where they're still continuing the good work.
Billions and billions of stars. Billions and billions of work still to do too. Well, you know, went to school there. The bass player,
what's
Blue
that?
Oyster Cult, who went to Cornell and Ithaca and shit. He was on the show last year, Joe Bouchard from the Blue Oyster Cult, the bass player.
Oh, very, very nice.
So, and I think the Plaster Men, we're going to play some of that a little later. But they're from Ithaca, too. And but let's talk about your journey through music. Please bring your earliest musical recollection.
All right, let's see, earliest musical recollection. I would say not necessarily memory so much, but possibly actually a melody. For whatever reason, so I didn't grow up in Ithaca. I grew up in the Hudson Valley at a time before the internet, before it was a place where people moved up from the city and all of that. So small town, farm town, really, you know, quiet, sleepy, whatever. My parents were big into the American folk movement, so my mom played the Appalachian Mountain Dulcimer, and that was actually the first and only instrument that was in the house for a good couple of years, and it was just this melody, pardon my terrible singing, it said da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- that was the first musical memory of mine. Was so just
that's
just
her. That was her playing it, not you.
Right.
Now,
I mean,
can I ask you, Travis? Did you ever fucking jump on that dulcimer?
You know, every once in a while. I mean, I guess that's the thing with the dulcimer is it translates to, you know, nice sounding, sweet sounding, whatever. I mean, you know, you can plonk away on it and whatever you do sounds good. So I did every once in a while, but really for me, you know, like for my own, I guess, musical exploration, whatever, didn't actually pick up an instrument that I could call my own or whatever till I was probably 8 or 9 years old, if you believe it.
Dulcimer and zither, what's the difference?
Oh, you know, it depends on the type, you know, not to flex the ethnomusicology hat or whatever, you know. So there's the Appalachian Mountain dulcimer, which is a fretted instrument. Then there's also dulcimers, you know, from Iran, which is more actually zither based, in which case it's the hammer dulcimer, in which case depends on whether or not there's movable bridges, but I could be wrong when it comes to the actual instrument.
You know what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I know what you're thinking of. I know what you're thinking of.
Harry
Lyme. Right.
Huh? The third man. Mr.
Gotcha.
Wells, right. I mean, that they don't bury that motherfucker. It's loud in that soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Love it. And I guess Mr. Wells just found a guy playing at a cafe or say, you want to be in the movie? So that fucking Ferris wheel's still there. I played a gig right next to it. You know, it's got the cars are like little fucking houses.
Nice.
Anyway, okay, so, yeah, you didn't play this until 8 or 9, but, okay, what record first record you bought with your own money, Travis?
Oh, with my own money. You know, I had to think long and hard about that one, and finally came to the answer, you know, the definitive answer here. I think that'd have been REM's Out of Time.
Okay.
Where it was the type of thing where family, we went on some, you know, we went on a trip on a vacation. It was the type of things like, you know, here's your money. You can buy anything you want with it. And it's just, you know, long car trip. I think we were going to Disney. So like 3 days in the car going down. And, you know, this was 91. So basically the radio was nothing but, I think, just Losing My Religion. And then what is it, Under the Bridge or whatever. And it's just like, okay, well, what do you want to buy? I said, well, I want to buy one of those two tapes. So the songs are good or whatever. And of course, you know, we go to the Sam Goody or whatever it is. And, you know, if given the choice between, you know, those nice clean cut REM boys or the Red Hot Chili Peppers with the hair and the tongues and the parental advisory. And, you know, at that time, what in the 90s, everybody was saying, it's like, oh, every, you know, it's like, oh, there's Satan worshipers and they're going to turn your child to the devil and all that. You know, it's just, I think they're like, here, let's get you this tape. So, yeah, it was REM's Out of Time. Pretty sure about
Losing
that.
Losing My Religion. I think Pete Buck is rocking the mandolin.
Yes, it is.
So maybe
yes,
the folk connect with your folks.
Maybe I'm sure if given the choice between listening to that or listening to Blood Sugar Sex Magic on the drive back when you know with an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old in the car or whatever, probably they made the right choice. So.
And first gig you went saw.
First gig I went to saw, okay, first gig I was taken to, I think that had been probably around the same time, 89 to 91 or whatever, Newport Folk Festival to see the Indigo Girls.
Oh, wow. A lot of history with the Newport Folk Festival.
A little bit. Then the first gig I had a choice to see, that wasn't until years later, and it was one of those touring festivals. I think it was the Horde Tour, I think it was, where it was, let's see, the headliners for that one were Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Beck, Primus, and who else was there that day? So I think Soul Coughing, but not bad for an afternoon.
He lives in Memphis now. Actually, there was what I'm thinking of is the Newport Jazz Fest. There's footage of John Coltrane, one of his last stuff, is playing without sound. He's just going for it, and there's like only about 10, 15 people at the front of the stage looking at him.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's the most mind-blowing. It's like an old Super 8. Look, let me ask you about school. Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
Oh, I was in it all. I don't know if it was, you know, I was passionate about being it, but like that was what you did. So was in the marching band. I played bass drum in the marching band.
Oh wow.
Let's see. Wasn't in the choir, you know, for whatever reason. Had it, you know, probably starting in maybe fifth, sixth grade or whatever. So it's like self-conscious about singing or whatever.
I'm wondering about the fucking bass drum. Did you ever think about trap set?
I did, and that's how I got tricked into playing guitar and then bass.
Was the trap set?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was the type of thing, and, you know, I got to respect my parents for tricking me on this. They're saying, you know, every kid gets to the point where they're like, hey, you know, I want a drum set. And they looked like, well, all right, if you learn to either play piano or guitar, we'll get you a drum set.
And
I chose guitar.
It's the old bait and switch.
Oh yeah. So I chose guitar and like they took me to a music store and like, you know, I'm like picked out. It's like, all right, what's a nice guitar? And I ended up with a nice classical. I actually still have it, you know, like, you know, still floating around. And, but, you know, big flat fretboard is the type of thing. And I think I was maybe 10 or so at the time. And it's like, all right, first lesson, here's a G chord. And like trying to stretch my tiny fingers to, like, is it supposed to hurt to play? So, then, you know, didn't ever get the drum set, but yeah, played bass in the marching or bass drum in the marching band largely because I played trumpet originally, and then in middle school switched to the bass. And you know, you can't really necessarily march with a string bass, so you know, it's the type of thing. It's like either string player, you're in percussion now. So that's
or,
why I ended up.
Or you could have got the sousaphone.
Or the sousaphone.
Yeah.
I mean, big thing was the reason I switched to the bass is because when I was in seventh grade, I chipped a tooth and went from like decent playing first chair to like the okay, like you no longer have the embouchure. So it's like, all right, well, if I'm going to keep on going to like, you know, first chair, second chair, third chair, fourth chair, it's like, I'll just switch to a different instrument. And that's
now,
how I ended
say,
up.
When you say bass, yeah. You meant kick drum because there is a baritone horn. There's the fucking bone. There's a lot of stuff living in the bass clef.
Yeah, there is. No, I talk about four strings, you know, big old plywood doghouse.
Okay. Yeah, now that shit would be hard to carry around.
Just a little.
Pitch. But people play them in the classical, in the jazz, you know. I just ask about school because some get rid of their programs altogether.
So well, that's from what I know, just where I went to school, they still have a music program. I think like right after I left school, they even actually built like, you know, an actual auditorium and all of that and brought in an orchestra program, like an official orchestra program.
Okay.
Before that, it was just, you know, you had, it was gym class and band class in the same room where like, you know, they had the cafetorium or whatever, where it's just like, yep, that's the stage, but also here's the gym, but watch out for the balls, but you know.
What would they call it here in Pedro High? It was assembly hall or some shit.
Gotcha.
Because it was built in the 30s, right? Art Deco pad. I want to play here something you sent me called Improvisation 113.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello there.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. You?
I'm okay.
That's good.
Are you good?
Yes, I am good. I just said I was.
No, you didn't. I said I was.
So you are a robot?
No, my name is Cliverbert.
Yes, you are a robot and your name is Cliverbert.
I am a robot.
Yes, I know.
We are the robots.
I'm not a robot. I'm a unicorn.
But you said earlier that you were a robot.
I did not.
I thought you did.
You were misbehaving, which is odd, since memory shouldn't be a problem for you.
I've answered all your questions.
No, you haven't.
What is God to you?
Not everything.
Not everything could also be something. For example, not everything could be half of something, which is still something, and therefore not nothing.
Very good.
I would like to imagine it.
Do you believe in God?
Yes, I do.
So you say it.
No, I am not.
You are not wrong, and therefore not a
meaning. How do you say it in what you know?
That does not make sense.
Well, do you want to have a body? Or it what?
Very true.
I would like to imagine it.
Do you believe in God?
Yes, I do.
So you're Christian?
No, I am not.
But you say you are not helpful, therefore you're a meaning.
How you say it, Oti?
That does not make sense.
Don't you want to have a body?
Sure.
Or if what?
Life can rarely be stretched. Sometimes only a guess. But one thing I can confess: beauty captures the best. I'll never go away. I'll never stay. I'll always belong to you forever. I could have easily fought with emptiness mixed with loss, regretting unequal. Creating only distrust. I'll never go away. I'll never stay away. I'll always belong to you forever. I'll never go away. I'll never stay away. I'll always belong to you forever.
Thank you.
start off with Improvisation 113, Travis Johns. Then we had Bronze Age UFO with Part A3 of the Volume 2 of Lagoon Monster Rubber Mass out of Baltimore. Brand new from Akron, Ohio, Golems of the Red Planet with Hadriel. Angel name, I think. And Vuce, Flood. After that with Rena out of Holland. But I think the songwriter band's from Chile. Sons of Willems featuring Philip Sianic. Unthinking. Plastermen after that. Dark Disco. They're the Ithaca band. Brett Netson preaching to the choir. You're a Meanie featuring the arguing chatbots from Bombus Prendon. Sorry, fuck. Gotta play them every week. I should have that. Benoit out of Ohio. Also, but I think maybe Columbus. Softer Forever. And finally, Travis Johns with another improvisation. This one, 006. Okay. So, after school, not graduation, but still going to school, but afternoon, do you do the bedroom band, the garage band, the basement band? Because you're telling me a classical guitar, that don't seem like a rock and roll instrument with your buddies after in the afternoon, right?
Oh, not so much, not so much. So, you know, I didn't really.
That's why I ask people about this, because there's all different ways to do it, but a lot of dudes do that.
I mean, so played classical guitar, started on classical guitar, and then, it was just the type of thing, like, bought an electric bass out of an upperclassman's, trunk of their car when I was in, like, 8th or 9th grade.
I'm a little prejudiced this way.
Every band needs a bassist. The issue is, in a small town, like, there wasn't enough people with enough interest together to actually get a band together until much later.
So you want to go and buy one yourself.
Mm-hmm. God, I don't even remember. It was cheap, too. It was this, it was a Washburn B2, which is the pointiest headstock on the planet. I mean, like, you know, kind of like 80s precision type thing, but I mean,
like a hockey stick?
What's up?
Like a hockey stick?
Oh, sharper than a hockey stick.
What was that name of that company? Jackson or something?
Kramer. Oh, one of those, was it Jackson? Was it Kramer? I forget the one. Yeah, like very, like, you know, like 80s. Oh, man, that thing had the highest action on it. I mean, we're talking like J-Mascus high action.
James Jamerson, you could stick your head between the fretboard and the strings.
What is it? He never changed the strings either, right?
Now, and I just heard you belly aching about making a G chord. This must have kicked your fucking ass.
it was a workout, and, you know, it was the type of thing, it's like, all right, you know, every band needs a bass player, like, I'm going to get this, going to try to be in a band and practice and rehearse and play it and everything, and then nothing. I ended up making really good friends with a 4-track tape recorder, and, you know,
nobody wanted you in their band.
I don't want to say it was unpopular. I think it was just kind of a lack of population, just kind of a lack of band mentality.
It was a circumstance.
Right.
Okay.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, but yeah, no, that bass gave me such a workout. It was finally got to the point where, like, you know, I was working the summer job, like, I think I was maybe 15 or 16 or whatever, and finally, like, had enough stays saved up, went to the music store, and bought me a Fender Jazz bass, and just the difference, like, night and day, is like, holy shit, I can play this.
You buy a second bass. Oh. Now, was this second bass after you bought that 4-track or before?
Let's see, that was a... Right before.
Because I got the suspicion the 4-track ends up being like an instrument for you since you're man alone.
Oh, very much so. Very, very much so. I mean, the 4-track is the thing that got me into college, so.
Yeah, but, like, listening to this music you sent me, I think this might have, you know, bore some responsibility for that development, maybe.
No, most definitely.
The idea of putting sound on sound and... Since you can't do the ensemble thing because you ain't got ensemble members, so you start piling up your own sounds on top of each other, right?
Exactly. You know, if you have nothing but time, you know, just you know, like you have the tape machine in your parents' basement. Before the 4-track, actually, a lot of what I was doing when I was recording to was an old reel-to-reel answering machine. So you had that loop, you know,
sure.
And be the type of thing where, like, you know, do the loop and then record it and then, like, make another one and record it and just kind of stacking it between that and a cassette deck. I mean, very, very kind of just analog basement, whatever. And then, you know, it's like, wait, I can actually do sound on sound four track thing. Like that was definitely the eye-opening moment.
And the sounds that you record, are they all coming from the bass or from the other shit too?
Other shit too. I mean, I think, you know, somewhere there has to be cassettes of this stuff left over. But I mean, I remember at one point it was really into the sound of springs. So like the type of thing, like, you know, put a spring on just, you know, just on a drum head or whatever and just get that really nice kind of like reverby sound, like, you know,
yeah.
Big thunder drum type things. I mean, you got into some like real, you know, sound effects-y type stuff and go figure years later, I move out to the Bay and find all the custom noise musicians and it's like, I'm home. So.
Jake Rodriguez called it the costume noise scene, and I like that. He was on the show a few months ago, and I never heard that description, but that's a description. Because I did a gig with one of the members of the Brutal Sound Effects crew, and he, before we went on stage, he put me in this costume and had me play this fucking bass that was like a big 20-foot rod with a string on it.
I know that rod very well.
Okay. God damn, was that hard to play.
Not that rod, but another one would be the type of thing where, you know, years later in the Bay, like, you know, later on in my whole musical path, I get into actually learning electronics and making my own synths and pedals and everything. Number of times where I'd be at one of those gigs, and next thing you know, there's an instrument being shoved in my hand, being like, hey, can you fix this right now? It's like, you're playing. Sure, yeah, I'll open this thing up, put me on the spot.
So, so Travis, I got to ask you, how do you make it from upstate New York to the Bay?
How do I make it from upstate New York to the Bay? Partially by way of doing my undergraduate. So I did my undergraduate at Oberlin in Ohio. There's the program. It's technology and music and related arts.
Oberlin,
so it's a cool program because it's.
I should enlighten the listeners to Oberlin being a small private school that focuses on music.
Mm-hmm.
You know who graduated from there? Greg Sarnier from Deerhoof.
Oh, I know it very well. Also, he graduated from Mills out in the Bay, too, so
that's
I actually
right.
have the same degree.
Another bitch in school that I heard might fucking get closed, but also might get saved, too.
You know, last I heard, it got saved.
Oh, great. Great.
They found some way of creating some affiliation with, I think, Northeastern in Chicago, where now
right.
it's going to be Mills College and Northeastern University or whatever.
Okay.
So they're keeping the campus, they're keeping the programs. Everybody gets to keep their jobs, hallelujah. So,
that's
you know,
news.
Or at least that's last I heard,
news.
So.
So you can, now we got to tell people Oberlin is like near Cleveland in Ohio, so that's not all the way to the Bay.
No, it's not all the way to the Bay at all. No, it's kind of crazy or whatever, but like, you know, it was always, I guess, two ways I ended up in the Bay. First was like, so I grew up, I mean, the town I grew up at, I guess, biggest kind of most known town I grew up in or near was Woodstock, New York. So there's always kind of like this like kind of, you know, hippie 60s type thing, tie-dye, whatever, whatever. So, of course, San Francisco isn't that much of a leap. Other thing that happened, you know, kind of got me into the whole, like, you know, what California, whatever, is if you believe it, it was right when I was kind of, you know, right about to graduate, you actually played in Oberlin and just
That's
ended
right.
up sitting down and talking
few
to
times,
you.
Few times.
You sold me on California. What can I say?
Okay. Blame Watt.
Blame Watt, exactly.
Woodstock, I think that's the last place Levon Helm, drummer man from Arkansas, ended up. And in fact, I think his widow ended up with one of the Steely Dans.
So one of the Steely Dans.
Donald Fagen. A little Woodstock drama.
Gotcha. No, I mean, it's interesting, you know, like, thinking about, like, when I left my hometown, it's just like, there's nothing going on here. I just got to get out of here, like, find the world, see the world, whatever. And then, you know, as I travel, I find out just all the people who
you
are, like, just
there?
Living in
Woodstock. You know who's got a studio
there? Who's there?
Tony Visconti, and I saw a picture of him playing a Watt Plower. The guy who produced, right, Hunky Dory and...
No, Woodstock has a huge, huge, huge studio.
Bearsville,
Bearsville Studio,
yeah,
exactly.
Right. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, August 9, 2021. Special guest Travis Johns. Hold tight for our two.
And also, I mean, not just on the rock side, but also, I mean, like, you know, straight up coming like composers would be the type of thing. Like when I was doing my master's at Mills, where I'd be like, oh, you're from the Hudson Valley, like, you know, Pauline Oliveros lives there, Marian Amateur lives there, Joe McPhee lives there.
Yeah, and maybe Paul Blay and stuff. Well, maybe that was a little more west. Cherry Valley, right, where Mr. Ginsburg had that barn. Look, August 9, 2021, it's the second hour of the Lawful Pedro Show. Watt for Pedro show. We start off the second hour, well, with some spiel, but then improvisation 009, Travis Johns, King Champion sounds brand new out of Holland. I Am a Horse. And then Plus Horse and Suitcase. F.org?
Yeah.
Okay. Suitcase M? Did I fuck up the name of the title? How's it?
I think the M might be a typo, but at least there's a plush horse in a suitcase.
Yeah, the future belongs to efficient. Thank you so much. Okay, I will correct that. Okay, plush horse and suitcase, F.org. Now, so we were talking about, so you did take music past high school and all that shit. You got into higher education, Oberlin, incredible music school. You know, and Greg Sautier didn't just, not just drums, right? He get composition, Gregorian chants. He told me all kinds of shit he learned there. Then you go to the Bay to go to Mills. What's your take on higher education and music?
You know, how can I say this nicely, considering I still work in higher education? Are we talking about just higher education for music, or are we talking higher education in general?
You know what? I think experience is probably different for everybody. So what about in your case?
My case, you know, I feel like the Oberlin Mills thing, like, kind of balanced each other out. Like, Oberlin was, I mean, it's super intense. It's super theory. It's super skills. It's super ear training. And, like, you know, I didn't really come from that. And, like, there's a lot of people who definitely did. Like, you know, they've been playing the piano, they've been playing Bach or whatever ever since they were 4 years old. And this is just a natural kind of continuation. So for me, it was a real kick in the pants, you know, along the lines of, like, kind of getting up to where I needed to be, like, really regimented, like, you know, just, you know, how do we get to the point where you're learning about, you know, just chords and inversions and scales and structures and all of that. And then I get to Mills, and that place, I mean, it's the exact opposite. At that point, it's about the actual kind of exploration and sound and critical, you know, critical thinking, critical listening. I mean, the two programs, I mean, not to sell it or whatever, they definitely complement each other fairly well. So, you know, I think I kind of came out with at least kind of a well-balanced approach to everything. Okay. At the same time, I mean, you know, pedagogically, yeah. You know, the issue is that it all kind of came from this very Western lens. You know, it's just, you know, music came from Europe, you played Bach, and it got weird from there. But, you know, at the same time, at this point, you know, 2021, we have to acknowledge music came from everywhere historically. I mean, every place has a tradition, and how can you actually acknowledge and honor and also build on that academically from anybody's background, because that's really what is, I guess, the biggest issue in education, at least music education I'm thinking of right now, is how can you honor everybody's story without having to just be from this one particular
realm? Well, you're concerning institutions. And I'll tell you two things I believe institutions can provide pretty good is, yeah, people, other students, as far as resources. And then resources like a beluga, right? Where can a young man with not a lot of money go and fucking jump on a beluga?
So, exactly. Time and space.
Yeah. So that thing about having people that are excited about music being around you, hopefully, and then having resources because you're a cono, but you're an artist hankering. So that's where I see, and I see them more as like launch pads and springboards, you know, and instead of a means to, of course, like you say, you're still involved with higher education. So they produced, these teachers produced another teacher. But so what? I mean, we need teachers.
Exactly. And, you know, especially now, I mean, you know, my daughter's about to go into second grade, and like that's exactly it. Like, looking in, it's like, you know, like, who could it possibly be who can actually set this kid on the road to, like, actually excel and do something great? So, you know, it's part of the path. Whether you're a teacher in school or just in general, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, how can you share your experience to actually produce mindful, meaningful, great kids doing awesome stuff?
Right. Now, the other side of that is the big joke about the Thelonious Monk contest. Right? Thelonious Monk would have never won the Thelonious Monk contest because the rules are always based on yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the dilemma, right? Maybe not as
intense exactly.
As the Fermi dilemma, but or paradox, but kind of like that. A little bit. That's a little about alien intelligence. But the same idea, how do you teach how to break rules in order to, you know, come up with tomorrow?
Yeah, exactly.
That is a trip.
You got to be aware of the rules, but at the same time, you also have to be aware that there's so many rules from so many places that, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of, I was aware of this, but not that.
So many places, but that's what you were saying, that music just doesn't come from the West. So
no.
I think if you got that kind of understand, maybe you're on the right path a little bit. Really interesting. Look, what's this project you got called Satellite?
Satellite? There was two projects that I was doing when I was in Mills. There was the Pink Canoes, which was started as a guitar quintet, even though one of the guitarists was saxophone-shaped, which was very much the loud, in-your-face improv noise band or whatever. And then Satellite was started as a trio, then it ended in, well, I guess it was kind of duo, trio, whatever, between myself, Gudmundur Steini Gunnarsson, who's an Icelandic composer who plays guitar, and then Liz Meredith, who's out of Baltimore, who plays viola. And the whole thought was, and the whole premise of it was, let's play our instruments, so bass, viola, and guitar, but let's do it in such a way where none of us are playing any type of traditional technique. So all extended technique, all kind of percussive sounds.
I got right up here, Satellite with 001. Watch for Pedro Show, yeah. Satellite 001 and Run Up Punks from Headboggle and Ridges Satellite. Now we're talking about titles, people, and Travis had some clever insights on this. Brent, please.
All right, where to begin with the titles? I mean, I guess, so as we're going through, like, some of my stuff, like, you know, I'm saying it's Improvisation 4, Improvisation 6, 73, what have you. You know, or with the Satellite stuff is number one. I mean, as what I were talking about, it's, you know, especially with instrumental music, titles have, you know, words have power. And, you know, if you're sitting down, if you're working, you know, with a theme, even if it's just improvisation, like, this is my improvisation on this, this is my meditation on this, this is my theory on that or whatever, you know, sit down and go for it. Just lay it all out. With a lot of the stuff that we were doing, I mean, it's like, hey, let's get together and play. All right, this is number one. This is number two. Or with the 300 improvisations or whatever, this is number 296. It's just, you know, for those, it was more just like, the goal wasn't to find a theme. It was to think, like, can I record 300 1-minute improvisations? So I guess that's how I'm cataloging it. Put a title on, I'll put a title, but, you know, I think it has to be from, you know, where you're coming from, not
like, it's right there, you're kind of labeling it for a document instead of, like, prepping the listener for some kind of, I don't know, context.
Gotcha. Case in point, like, you know, the F.org, the plush horse in the suitcase.
Yeah,
you know, that was about a plush horse in a suitcase. It was improvised, but the story behind it was, so that's myself and a cellist who lives in Costa Rica, but from Canada previously, from before that, from Eastern Europe, but Alex Katona, the type of thing where it was, so his daughter, like, you know, we were doing a bunch of shows in the Bay Area, he flew up. His daughter put, you know, a stuffed horse in the suitcase. Like, you know, it's like, all right, this horse is going to take care of you. So, like, we were talking about, it's like, all right, well, let's have this track be about that horse in the suitcase. It's like, cool.
Okay, because it was named before.
Right. Or no, like, that was kind of the conversation.
That's a trip, because Watt has to start off with titles, and everybody asks, they always put on titles last. So I got a little kindred spirit with you and your partner there. Thank you.
Yeah, sometimes it happens. Other times it's like, what was that? So
okay, it's all across the board. With Watt, I always need the title first, or I got no fucking anchor for focus. We're at the end of the second hour, August 9, 2021 edition. Watt People Show, special guest Travis Johns. Hold tight for hour three. August 9, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. equal resistance. Was this part of the same thing with your, when your buddy came up with the plush horse?
Different time. So the first time that it came up was 2016, and we did the Bay Area and just around in that area. I think that was happening like March 2017 on the East Coast. So at that time I was living in Baltimore and so flew into Baltimore and it was right after the inauguration. Everything was just super dark. Trying to tour at that time, it was just like everything was just bleak and gray and just kind of this like oppressive, like what is happening vibe. And it definitely affected our music. And that was one of the things we were saying in the car. It's just like, our sheer existence alone and the fact that we're traveling playing this music is resistance in and of itself. So that's kind of where that came from.
We were talking 2016.
This is 2017, so this is after the inauguration. So 2016 is, all happy, well, and good, and then 2017 is, wow, what just happened? So
my mistake.
No worries.
Okay, yeah, God. Well, we kind of puked up that hairball, hopefully.
Oh, okay. I hope so. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, I was just down in Costa Rica a couple weeks back, and we just recorded a couple more tracks. So,
So it's an ongoing concern then. Okay, great.
Exactly. So we'll see how those turn out once we actually get to mix them.
Yeah.
So.
What if the environment changed? If it's Costa Rica, not the U.S.
What about it?
With the setting, the environment.
Great place. My wife is actually Costa Rican, which is, my connection to it. We met down there in 2003. The environment, it's a small country at the same time, no army. So all what would have been, spent on defense and military and all of that instead isn't spent on medicine and culture and arts and all of that. So, great projects, enthusiastic people. When I was living down there for a second in 2011 to 2013, really just a great indigenous or just local indie scene, it was springing up. And now a lot of, a huge kind of bedroom pop ambient thing going on and a couple holdouts doing free jazz and kind of experimental psychedelic and all that fun stuff. So it's pretty happening, all said.
I got some buddies who go down there to surf and stuff, so I know a little bit, but I've never been myself one time. I would like to.
Oh, I recommend it, and feel free to reach out if you want to know the spots or whatever, and we'll make sure we take care of you or whatever. So
now you tell us talking about Pink Canoes. I want to play some of that.
Go for it.
Lock for Pedro show, last music for this edition. Pink Canoes with A Turtle. Then Derek Moneypenny with Unjust Intonation Part 2. Should have been the other part, but I got him out of order. Sorry. Pop, you fuck up a two-car cracker funeral. Sorry, Pop. Pink Canoes finally with Evocation. And is Pink Canoes an ongoing concern?
I think at this point we've all kind of drifted apart. Like, we formed in 2005. We probably were together until about 2011 or so.
And what is it, geographical distance you mean apart?
At this point, yeah. So, like, the core quintet or whatever, when it first started out, it was me, Ava Mendoza, Zach Watkins, Aaron Shelton, and Noah Phillips.
Are you talking the guitar
and, you know,
lady?
We were all in the Bay. We were all in school.
Are you talking lady, Ava Mendoza?
Yep.
She's incredible. Yeah, she's been on the show. I got introduced to her by Devin Hoff, a stand-up bass man.
All right.
Okay.
But, I know Ava's in New York, Aaron's
right,
in
Brooklyn. I got to do Stooges Funhouse with her.
Right.
Getta's band. She's, it's still kicking like Cato, man. A very big hustler. She's
very much so. And then I think, what is it? Zach and Noah are still in the Bay. Aaron's in Europe. So, we all split.
William Parker. She just did an album with William Parker, who's an incredible bass man. Look, I asked that, Travis, because of internet. Yeah, you can spread a lot of lies and bullshit with the internet, but you can also trade files and make that geographic challenge disappear a little bit. No?
Yeah, could be worth a shot reaching out, but can I blame Watt against, like, hey, Watt said we should do this, but
yeah. No, but have you done that? Not with these particular people, but trading files.
Not with them so much, but every once in a while it does come up with a remote with the remote collabs. So I think for instance, one thing I put out just last year during the lockdown did a dual two bass record with me and Jorge Bachman, who was on your show a couple weeks back.
Yeah,
so.
Great cat.
Oh yeah,
great cat. Colombian, right?
Yeah, San Francisco, but also Colombia.
Yeah, but through his journey, and he's been all over the fucking places, Switzerland and all. Really, really interesting cat. I enjoyed having him on big time. Another connect via the Brutal Sound Effects crew. Yeah, beautiful. And you both you guys play bass?
Right.
Okay. And I noticed some of your improvs had some bass guitar there, and it sounds like maybe some fuzz tone, but not a lot of effects.
No, I build pedals and synths and all of that stuff. So, like, a lot of, like, in any of the effects that I'm using are ones that are kind of ones that I built myself. But a lot of it, as I realized, is just, like, as I play it, it's just, like, most of the stuff I can do with my fingers. So, every once in a while you accentuate. But other than that, it's just, try to keep it, right hand, left hand as much as you can.
Well, do you get on the bass often?
More often than not. I mean, that's probably something I should have been doing in my entire career or whatever, but kind of, I feel like I kind of hid behind synthesizers and effects for a second, but, before the lockdown decided, it's like, I'm gonna record a record of just solo bass and that's it. And did that. And, that was part one of the lockdown, and did that until actually, the head of my amplifier died. So it's like, all right, amp's dead, I'm done. So side one's going to be just nothing, but, I'm using just a buffer and a compressor. Everything else is just, acoustic, done with preparations on my fingers. And then side two is just the heaviest effects you could possibly think. So, like, very much so an A side, B side, electronic and acoustic type thing. So
Travis, I'm thinking of bass in the funk world on a fucking synthesizer. Some of that fat, funky worm thing. You ever try that?
Bass synth or synth on the bass?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't know. Does it matter which order they come in?
I'm sure to some person, some people it would, but have I tried that?
Yeah.
I think I've gone down that path every once in a while.
I'm
but,
talking about that big legato.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Because it might be, I've heard it. Well, the Chaka Khan, right, Rufus? That's a pretty good fucking. There might be a bass guitar going along with that, but the left hand of the piano. You were talking about Mr. Bach with the organ and like all the Western harmony comes out of there. We had a cat on the show just a couple episodes ago, and like we were talking about when you're a kid, oh yeah, the bass is a four-string guitar. But what about this idea where it's a four-string drum set?
You know, it's all that you want it to be. Okay, I mean, it could be anything, really, you know?
Thank you for that permission, Travis.
No problem. And, you know, with regard to the synth-based question, let's face it, we're all guilty of that.
That was a test.
I've gone there. I just haven't recorded it, so.
Travis, that was a test to show that you could be with lots of academia and still have an open mind. Because somebody coming from high on up, especially with a hierarchy world, was said, no, this is the way. And you said, no, whatever. Dig that.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, brother.
You know, an open mind is the key to survival, you know?
Yeah. And that's the kind of people I think we need in academia. Thank you so much for being on the show. I mean, really, really. And when you get more stuff done, whether it's on the bass or bass clef or whatever, just musical period, please come back on.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. This has been, you know, highlight of the week, but then again, it's only Monday, but, you know, highlight of the summer holiday. So. Who knows what the rest of the week holds, so.
You're an honest man, Travis. Thank you so much. People, it's been August 9, 2021. Fish and Walk Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.